many of you know what a trap law is? Okay, quite a few. Actually, about a decade ago, I didn't know, and that's why we decided we'd have a little bit of a talk about trap laws. I mean, it's all about policy at APHA this year. And what I want to do before I begin, just giving you a little overview of them, is to acknowledge how I found out about them. And it was through the Alan Guttmacher Institute. And that's www.guttmacher.org. I know it like the back of my hand, let me tell you that. But that's where I learned about trap laws about a decade ago, and it's a great source. I want to acknowledge them. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Stanley Henshaw, who is in the audience. And although we don't know one another, we've met a couple of times, I believe, I want to acknowledge you because you have taught me through your research and writing about abortion and unintended pregnancy in the United States. So I want to thank you for that. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what I know about trap laws. They're kind of interesting, and there's something to be paying attention to. Are we using the... Okay. I'm going to go back now. Well, I can't go back, but that's okay. What I wanted to do... Oh, here I am. What I want to do is just reiterate what my colleagues have actually said to give you a sense of abortion in the United States, because trap laws apply to abortion in the United States. There are about 1.3 million abortions every year in the United States. About 2% of women 15 to 44 had an abortion in 2002, and as has been said before, abortion is the most common surgical procedure, one of the most common surgical procedures in the United States. Women who are historically underserved tend to be women who seek later abortions, and as we've heard, abortion mortality and morbidity is low where abortion is legal. Okay. What I want to talk about, though, is providers. And one of the things that we know about abortion providers in the United States is they are getting older. And that actually matters because trap laws attack providers, essentially. In 2000, there were 37% fewer abortion providers than there were in 1982. States are seeing a decline in the number of abortion providers generally. And in 2000, about 87% of counties in the U.S. did not have an abortion provider. I'm asking this question, is abortion a political hot topic? Because as I was preparing this talk, a colleague of mine who's a chronic disease epidemiologist came into my office and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing something for an abortion session at APHA. And he said, is that still a hot topic? And I said, no, nothing like cardiology, which you study, nothing like that. But he said, well, Roe v. Wade, it's not a hot topic. But the issue is actually that it is quite a hot topic, as you all know. And there were about 300 restrictions on abortions between 1999 and 2005, many of those state-level restrictions. What's key about that is that's a heck of a lot more restrictions than there were in a previous period, 85 to 91. So I guess it's still a hot topic. Well, what are the trap laws? They're targeted regulation of abortion providers, the acronym TRAP. They apply only to facilities where abortions are performed. And they're more stringent than regulations applied to comparable medical practices. They are state laws, so you pay attention on a state level to them, and they're stealth, they're under the radar. In fact, if you read trap laws, they're really boring, they're a snooze. But they're nuisance laws, and they have an effect. Come on, little guy. Or maybe something's happened. I'm patient. Well, how long have trap laws been around? And actually, they date probably to the 1992 Supreme Court decision that reaffirmed the right to abortion, but said states can regulate abortion providers if the regulations don't place an undue burden on a woman's ability to obtain an abortion. And this Supreme Court decision started a shift in strategy for anti-abortion people. Chip away at abortion indirectly. Shift the focus from a woman's right to obtain an abortion to the medical facility or the providers themselves. So it is chipping in through the back door, essentially, trap laws are. And again, sorry, but The trap laws themselves, then, don't overtly seem to influence the pregnant woman's decision. Laws like, laws like waiting periods, parental consent, those chip away at decision making. But trap laws actually regulate the abortion procedure, and they're often justified as health regulations. And that's why I said they're kind of under the radar, and they're actually kind of boring, because who wants to, you know, read state health regulations? They often just go right past most of the public. And the kinds of trap laws, and I'm going to show you some examples of them too. Kinds of trap laws. Let's see how this goes. I apologize, this is just slower than heck. The network is set up, I think, for the whole conference, though. The kinds of trap laws actually regulate the offices of physicians who perform abortions. They say that they have to be licensed by the state health department. A lot of medical offices are not typically licensed, so this is very specific to abortion. They impose civil or criminal penalties on abortion providers who are not in compliance with state licensing. They essentially are like micromanagement of an abortion provider. They give the administrator of an abortion facility extra responsibilities. They require additional training or qualifications of staff. Some of them have mandatory physical exams for employees. Again, these vary by states. Some specify the physical design and the function of the facility. There is at least one trap law that is mandatory testing of patients for STIs, which of course bring an additional burden to the facility. I think there was one other thing, but that's okay. One of the things that's very interesting about some trap laws is that they actually authorize state health departments to search medical offices and patient records of abortion providers. And this is subject to the licensing. So they can actually search these offices without warrant or probable cause. I want to give you some examples of trap laws. In South Carolina, health department inspectors shall have access to all property and area objects, records, and reports of the abortion facility. And they shall have the authority to make photocopies of those documents required in the course of inspections and investigations. Again, South Carolina, look at this nuisance law here. All outside areas, grounds, and or adjacent buildings shall be kept free of rubbish, grass, and weeds that may serve as a fire hazard or as a haven for insects, rodents, and other pests. Again, a nuisance law, but one that you can be fined if you're in violation. Mississippi requires abortion clinics to be outpatient surgical centers, requiring physicians have admitting privileges at local hospitals. And in March 2007, there was an omnibus abortion bill that required providers of abortion to purchase ultrasound equipment and perform an ultrasound for every woman seeking an abortion. Again, we talked about, you know, we're losing providers in abortion. These kinds of things are set up to just do that, to keep people away from providing abortion. In North Carolina, this is another example of the nuisance law, but this is also an example of how boring some of these laws are. I mean, if you were reading this, you would just go, this is a snooze. But look what it can do. North Carolina, abortion procedure and recovery rooms shall have a minimum of 6 air exchanges per hour, and all air supplies to procedure rooms shall be delivered at or near the ceiling, and they must pass through a minimum of 1 filter bed with a minimum filter efficiency of 80%. And these are boring. These aren't as interesting as denying a woman's right. They're boring. Texas, licensed facilities must establish and maintain a written quality assurance program run by a quality assurance committee of at least 4 staff members who must meet at least quarterly. Boring. We're not going to be reading this. Missouri, you're Missouri. Each employee shall have a pre-employment health examination by a physician. The examination is to be repeated annually and more frequently if indicated to ascertain freedom from communicable diseases. These exams include STI testing. Missouri. facilities performing second and third trimester abortions or more than 5 first trimester abortions per month must be ambulatory surgical centers, thus requiring that the 3 clinics in the state to be licensed by the state. Hallways have to be 6 foot wide and doors at least 44 inches wide. Separate changing rooms for female and male staff. Recovery room with space for a minimum of 4 beds, 3 feet of clearance around each. And as of September, actually, a federal judge has issued a temporary injunction to explore some compromises. Now, this does not seem to promote women's health or actually assure the medical quality of an abortion. These are nuisance laws. Let's see. Come on, Lobel. So TRAP laws essentially treat abortion differently from other medical procedures. They allow a unique form of state government micromanagement and oversight. They reduce the number of abortion providers by subjecting them to criminal and civil penalties that they wouldn't face in any other type of medical practice. They raise the cost of providing abortion. They impose requirements that are medically unnecessary. They could interfere, actually, with best medical practices. By the way, abortions are less regulated in many states than other procedures that have greater risk than an abortion up to 20 weeks. And those procedures include DNC, ovum retrieval for in vitro fertilization, vasectomy, sigmoidoscopy. Again, these are nuisance laws. Okay. Are they common? Maybe I'm just jabbering about something that's only happening in South Carolina, Mississippi, and Missouri. Well, over half of the states actually have some kind of TRAP laws. The laws vary, and so you have to pay attention on a state level, but 33 states have some law subjecting abortion providers to restrictions that are not applied to other medical professionals. And 25 states restrict abortion care even very early to hospitals or special facilities. Who suffers most? It is the woman with resources who continues to be able to get abortion. And it is the low-income women, people in marginalized populations, people that live in rural areas who just don't have good access to legal abortion and turn to very unhealthy alternatives. These TRAP laws really have the potential of reducing the number of abortion providers and disenfranchising women who cannot afford to move around and get them. This is a marvelous statement by David Grimes. He's former chief of the CDC branch that monitors abortion safety. In public health, we identify a problem, we figure out the causes, we look for solutions, and we implement them. Here, and he's talking about TRAP laws, we see a vigorous response in the absence of a problem. It's science run amok. It's public health run backwards. Well, what can we do as public health professionals? I think TRAP laws don't have to be under the radar, and I thank the Guttmacher Institute and the Center for Reproductive Rights actually for really pushing us to understand what TRAP laws are. They don't have to be under the radar. Become informed. Your state, Planned Parenthood, NARAL, Alan Guttmacher, these places are full of information about TRAP laws. And you know what I think we should do? I think we should tell the media about them. And I know these are snooze laws. I mean, what's interesting about, you know, the height of a ceiling or the width of a door? But let's talk to media and say these are what the implications of the height of the ceiling is and the width of the door. And also educate legislators about these nuisance laws. I mean, if we find them boring, maybe the legislators who are passing them do really too, or they're not thinking about them. They don't reflect best medical practices. That's an argument. They increase the cost of care. They burden patients, providers, and law enforcement. Law enforcement, they burden. That's one thing we should think about. And they decrease access of the most socially vulnerable women to abortion. So I just want to acknowledge references for this, and I just hope that I've given you a little bit of information about TRAP laws. I suggest that we all go back home to our home states and find out what's going on with TRAP laws. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Wendy. We have about 5 minutes for questions.
I'd love to respond to that because, Debbie, I also teach reproductive health at Minnesota, and one of the things that the anti-choice group has been very good at is using language. I agree, actually, that the language keeping abortion rare is what's contributing to the squeamishness, and we're demonizing it with that very statement. And I think that many of us maybe have to really think about the language that we're using, which is what I know you're encouraging us to do. I think abortions will be a necessity. One of the things about unintended pregnancy is that there is contraceptive failure. Women use contraceptives. Heather told us 98% of women use contraceptives, but contraceptives will fail, even with good use. So abortions will be a necessity, and as long as we call them something that we want to keep rare, we demonize them. And again, I always think about abortion as this really unique medical procedure. I mean, we don't talk about keeping other kinds of procedures rare, not in that way. So I just want to, I don't have an answer, but I think we should listen to our language.
Thank you again so much for coming.